you know, ABCD, and the distribution of it is such that, well, we'll show you how where Connecticut fits in there. But what kind of questions do we ask? Well, we ask questions about what your state laws are in terms of plumbing fixture standards, clothes washer standards, building codes, plumbing codes, what do they look like? How do you deal with your non-revenue water loss and utility distribution systems? What laws do you have for that? Is water conservation a condition of a water right permit or ability to withdraw water from a water supply system? And do you have requirements for drought preparedness plans? Do water suppliers have to develop water conservation plans and file them somewhere? Does the state offer financial assistance or technical assistance? Do you require metering or volumetric billing? And do you require rate structures that encourage water conservation? So these are the kinds of questions that were asked. You'll see where Connecticut got points and where they didn't get points, and their total was 26 for the 2017 scorecard. And so Connecticut ended up ranked in the top 17 states out of 50, so that's not terrible. But I was personally a little chagrined because Connecticut was one of the first states to adopt the 1.6 gallon per flush toilet in 1989. We were one of then only six states who had started to do that. So Connecticut was very progressive in those days. But this score is, again, not bad, but it can be improved. And one of the things we would do is look at the kinds of laws that could be suggested to add to Connecticut's arsenal. Right now, it's got a B-minus grade. It's tied with Utah and North Carolina. But there are lots of things that we could suggest that we could, you know, put together in terms of potential draft legislation. And here you can see where some of those areas might be. So where you see a lot of cross-hatching, those are areas that we could make suggestions. Maybe financial assistance for conservation is never going to happen at the state level. So maybe that's one that we won't even bother with. But there are others that we could talk about, you know, requiring volumetric billing on a water bill, requiring conservation-oriented rate structures, developing requirement for water sense fixtures to be the state standard. There are already six states that require water sense level fixtures for their plumbing equipment, plumbing fixtures. So that's something that could be an easy fix in addition, and then you'd get points there. And then expanding non-revenue water and water loss targets and requiring validated audits that would need to be done by the water utilities on a regular basis. These are examples of the kinds of things that we could suggest, improving water supply or drought requirements, et cetera. So another area we could do some work on pretty quickly would be in water conservation education outreach. And there, of course, you know, you have to spend money on education programs. The best programs don't come cheap. But there's lots of resources out there that can be used that are already existing. Here's the Home Water Works website, which is a website that we've built for the consumer. It's, you just go to it as home-water-works.org. And it's got lots of resources for the consumer. It's got a calculator that's like a little treasure hunt, helps them answer questions about their water use and gives them tips and recommendations for what they could do to improve the water efficiency profile of their home. We can also customize the calculator. We're currently doing a calculator customization for the state of Massachusetts. The state of Massachusetts is building its own conservation website, and they want to use our calculator in their new website, but we're going to customize it to Massachusetts issues, and we could do the same in Connecticut. So that's something we could talk about. And just providing lots of useful information to the consumer, making sure the consumer understands just where water is used in their household. You know, we tend to focus a lot on indoor water use, especially on the East Coast, but even on the East Coast, there's a surprising amount of water that gets used outdoors, and people just don't realize, especially if they have an automatic irrigation system, just how much is being dumped on their landscape. So getting good information, useful information to the consumer is important. I had mentioned the Practical Plumbing Handbook. That's something that would be also immediately available. We can customize the cover of it for Connecticut, and we can, you know, perhaps even do some additional work inside. But this is a guide that it appeals to those who are DIY folks, but it's a great guide to all of the water-using fixtures in their home. I mean, not just the typical plumbing and appliance fixtures like toilets and shower heads and clothes washers and dishwashers, but it also covers the irrigation systems. It talks about their water meter and how to read it. It talks about the issues of water pressure, what that means in a home, water heaters, pools and spas, water softeners, all of those types of water using equipment are there. It's all covered. And it's a big focus on helping consumers identify and repair leaks. That's a huge area that we can help educate consumers on. And this guide provides insulation and maintenance tips, and it's a handy little sort of 4x6 booklet that the consumer can take everywhere. And it's printed, even though we now have most of these materials online in a very digital way. This is something that has stayed printed because you can take it into your bathroom. You're not going to take your laptop or even your phone into the bathroom if you're doing a plumbing repair. But this is a book you can bring in and much more easily use. And so we get really pretty positive response to consumer use for that. Hundreds of thousands of copies of this have been sold around the country. And then coming up with some sort of messaging campaign that might be appropriate for Connecticut. This is an example of a program that we have free of charge at the Alliance for Water Efficiency. Again, this is something that can be customized. But it's based on messages that did say, you can only understand your leak if it's in the context of something that you already recognize in terms of a size. So here's a water bottle in the ad. It's a 20-ounce water bottle. And the water or running toilet waste can fill 800 of these bottles in one day. And that's a statistic that kind of, people go, what? No, that's not possible. But yes, that is what a running toilet wastes. If you have a broken sprinkler head, it can waste 384 of these bottles in 10 minutes. So it's a kind of campaign that, helps consumers recognize in scale what is happening in their household. So those are the kinds of consumer education tips that we recommend that become very personal to the consumer. And then the last thing I just want to finish up with was the area of incentives for outdoor water conservation measures. And we have done a fair amount of work in this area. We have created a sustainable landscapes guide specifically for utilities that will help them design programs that will incentivize better sustainable landscaping that uses climate-appropriate plants. So it's a bigger problem in the West than it is in the East. When people move from the East, retire to the West, and want to take their geraniums and all their high water using pachysandra with them, this is still a guide that is the utility programs that we feature in this guide are from all over the country, not just the western part of the United States. So it's organized into sections that help, provide some utility guidance. And so this is an example of the kind of information that we would be providing, in terms of designing some, incentives for maintaining landscapes and developing sustainable approaches that are much more water efficient. So what I just want to leave you with here is a last slide that maybe we should leave up. I have some questions for you all before we really get started on all this. I want to make sure we are all on the same page on how we should approach this. And so given this pandemic, my talking about an in-person rates workshop means it can't be held anytime soon, right? We're probably not looking at anything before the fall of 2020 or maybe even the spring of 2021. And I is that okay? I don't know. Should we wait until we can do it in person? Yes, we think that works best, but I don't know how much longer you want to wait. If you prefer not to wait that long, should we attempt to try to do this in some virtual sessions, maybe two virtual sessions of 2 hours each? I think it might be hard to get a lot of participation that way, but I don't know. We've never done this, so I don't know. I've been on the phone with Jan Beecher about it. She says they've converted all of their trainings at the Institute of Public Utilities to a virtual format right now, and she says she's getting good response. But because we have to do so much marketing for the rates workshop, I don't know how this is going to, potentially affect attendance and whether we'll get to the broad spectrum of stakeholders that we want to talk with each other during the breaks and lunch. We'd be missing that interaction opportunity. So we could wait. If you would still want to do it in person, we could wait, and then immediately we could start on all the other pieces. We could start on the state law and policy piece for sure. Or would you prefer that we work in the order that the tasks that you gave to us? And then the last most important question is, how should we structure stakeholder input into this process? We don't want to be designing this in a vacuum for you. We want this to be something that everybody feels is important and helps decide what some of the recommendations should be that move forward. So I'm looking to you for guidance as to how you want to structure that process, and we'll be happy to work with you to get that done.
Marianne.
The first three. I would say that I think that an in-person workshop is very important, and I would support postponing it and starting on the other tasks first. Certainly, if it were in the fall of 2020, I don't think there would be any major issue. Having to postpone it for a full year could be somewhat more problematic, but it's still, I think we need to play that by ear, but I think that that's important. Having said that, I have noticed on these two calls today, the implementation work group and this one, that we have some participants that we've never seen in person. So the flexibility of being able to log into something does bring additional folks. And so before this started, I would have been very vehement that an in-person workshop was essential. I'm not quite as vehement at the moment just from today's experience, but still, I would vote for an in-person workshop.
Marianne?
Yes.
This is John Hudak. How you doing?
Hey, John.
I could offer a couple of suggestions. If we want to get the right people at the table, people who are, you know, finance-minded, rate-making, for these people in utilities, including mine, the house is on fire right now.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
We're cutting our capital budget for next year, for example, from $38 million to $18 million. So,
wow.
And cutting our O&M by $5 million. So I think we need to get through this fire before we, you know, really, for these people to really focus on this. But
yeah.
My second suggestion would be that, and you mentioned doing a case study with a Connecticut utility. I would ask if you could do two different utilities, one being a regional and one being a municipal, because of the fact, you know, the investor-owned already has the RAM. And I think they're very different, even a regional versus in terms of the pressures they face. So that would be my suggestion, is do two and the two different types.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's it. David here. Good,
yeah,
good suggestion, John. Oh, Jack, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I would agree with Virginia that I think in-person is critical, a person that's traveled all around the world to seminars. However, I think that we have to, and we should start before the in-person with, in terms of the priority list, but then we're going to have to do a check in the fall. Because we may be living in a whole, we may all be working at home forever. People might be saying, this is really good for the state or a private business or whatever, working at home. Look at all the money we're saving by not having to put the lights out of the office and everything else. So we might be living a whole different world by the fall.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
but I think that who knows? I mean, who absolutely knows? Because nobody knows at this point. We don't have a crystal ball at all. You know, I've got CNN on the background here, and it doesn't look very promising in the near future, that's for sure, in terms of what's going on. But I have a question for you. What's your success been like in other states getting this through, your legislative agenda?
When you say legislative agenda, do you mean on rates or do you mean on the other topics?
Anything. I mean, what kind of reception have you gotten in the capitals that you've worked with?
So we have been participating with the states. So I mentioned six states already have standards that are mandating water sense fixtures, and we work with all six states. They asked us to come in and provide testimony. They've asked us to help them write the language. And so California, Texas, Georgia, Colorado, Nevada, those are all states that actually reached out to us and asked us for our help. So we have been able to do that. We don't typically take the lead because that's not our place, but we provide support and we provide backup and we provide legitimacy in terms of the analysis of and the research provided. So that's what
we've
done.
Marianne, when you say they, who's they? Who in the state asked you to come in and?
Okay, so in Colorado, Denver Water.
Curious.
Sure. So let's take Colorado. Denver Water wanted to submit a bill to the legislature, so they worked with their legislator, got it introduced, and then we were asked to come and testify at hearings.
Okay.
So, and we've done quite a bit of that. We're accustomed to being part of that process and making sure we support what is being asked for. And in some cases, we've you know, made adjustments in the legislation to make sure that the practical implementation problems would be avoided, you know, making sure that the standards, the ANSI numbering was correct, and making sure that we weren't creating a problem in the statute language that would have to be dealt with later. So we provide that kind of assistance and support.
I think, and I love the idea, and I say this all the time, we spend a significant amount of money in our state in terms of public outreach and the energy world, and I would love to somehow come up with the funds so we could do some public service announcements, and I mean they're very impactful.
Yeah.
We could do. Years ago, we did commercials for the energy world, and I think people get it. They see it. They understand it. So, I mean, we do seem to do it for everything else, but we don't do enough of it for water. So, I think that's something I have to consider as well.
And one of the things we would do in terms of the consumer education is we would do an inventory for you of what things you could already use that would be free.
Terrific.
And then adapt to that. So that was part of the reason I was showing you some of the things that are already available.
Thank you.
We want to make it specific to Connecticut. We wanted to say the Connecticut message. We want it to be yours. But there are ways to do this affordably, I think.
Excellent.
Hey, Marianne, this is David. A great presentation. Thank you for all the information. And I agree with Jack and Virginia that about the rates workshop, the importance of having it be in person. I think we can. People have been commenting. I don't know if you can see the comments, but asking about, you know, going forward with the other issues and the other tasks while we wait for an opportunity to do that. I think you probably get concurrence on that. We can.
Okay.
I just want to point out how critical it is, though, that we hopefully address this rates question, because all we'd be doing is you've identified lots of other opportunities for promoting conservation. If we don't get the rates thing right, we're just exacerbating some of the issues we've
right.
already seen in Connecticut.
Right.
Right. So I think that's a critical issue.
And you know, the rates model that we've built addresses that issue very specifically. It enables utility to put in their existing rate structure and then to do some scenario planning for how the rates would change to meet that revenue requirement. It gives you the ability to match the rates to the revenue requirement that you know you're going to need, and then do a probability analysis on whether you can actually collect that. You know, it's... A city council or, you know, board of selectmen or water board always wants to say, well, gee, you know, we really don't want to do a double-digit rate increase. Can't you change your cost of service study to show that it's an 8% increase? I mean, this kind of thing is happening all the time, and you'll never meet your revenue requirement if you're thinking along those lines. So we're trying to get people to think of it a little differently and help give them the political will to go for what they need. Yes, it's going to mean rate increases in the short term, but it can be less of a rate increase long term. And we've done some analyses and systems around the country for different communities showing that long-term conservation kept rates lower because it reduced the amount of new investment that was needed. Not sure how that would pencil out in New England, though. If you've got a lot of systems that are over capacity, avoiding new infrastructure is not going to be the new thing. You're replacing existing infrastructure, and that's a bill that conservation doesn't help with. So these are the kinds of things we would look at in the process.
Marianne, this is awesome. I'm wondering, given what you just heard from John Hudak,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, to me that's shocking to hear from one of our large utilities. You know, the financial impacts of what we're going on right now? Is that even understood or can be calculated at this moment?
Well, AWWA has just released this big report that talks about the impact that COVID is going to have on the water utility community. These are terrible numbers. Exactly. And they're looking for federal assistance to help with this, because it's going to hit a lot of utilities very hard.
I don't think there's enough money in the world to be able to help to make up the issues that we're going to face. I don't even think we can begin to think through everything that we're going to have to deal with. What you just said, I think is important. You know, going to your ratepayers and asking them to pay more when people have lost their jobs, when people can't, you know, all of the shutoffs have been stopped. I think this is a really very unique time to be talking about these issues.
Yeah.
And I think it's an incredible challenge that we have to overcome at this moment in time. I don't have the answer for you. I know we've been chatting with the water industry week after week for the last 8 weeks in a row. And the more I think about this program, the more I think you're going to get an enormous pushback from our large municipal systems. Because not only they're facing it on the water, they're also facing it on the wastewater side. You know, the amount of efforts they are taking, the extraordinary efforts for PPE and keeping their people safe in the field, it's an enormous expense that was never anticipated. So I just want to put that out there that, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
We don't even know what the new reality is. And Jack's point, we may be all teleworking for the next year. Who knows? We don't even know that answer yet in state government. So, I want this to move forward. I agree with the in-person workshop. And I think the rate issue, I think, is number one importance. And I'd love to do in person, but I don't see it happening in the fall, to tell you the truth. What I hear about the second wave and the third wave of illness until we actually get a vaccine that works. So that's, again, not my perspective from what I hear.
Yeah, this is a wild card that we had not anticipated. We didn't plan for it in the programming. And we're going to have to figure out what some of the answers are going to be to help utilities through this. This is going to be terrible financial adjustment.
Yes.
Was there a timeline or a deadline for you to complete your work in the agreement, Marianne?
No.
Okay, good. So we don't have to take that into consideration.
Nope. We're happy to adjust the timeline as appropriate.
So can we make comments? Can I make a comment?
Please do.
Hi. So the rates, that's interesting. Whatever we do rates, probably the way to get everybody to the table is to write some draft legislation, whatever year that is. They come right away. You know? People will participate. But I wanted to point to an interesting thing in your presentation on natural landscapes. And we were speaking in a conference call, Alicia was on it, about helping people, this was in the Fairfield County area, to develop new attitudes as they have in the West, where it's an embarrassment to have 2 acres of lawn and your neighbors say, shame, shame. And what you want to have is a natural landscape that's good for the environment in many ways, but good for water conservation. And I think that with the cooperation of garden clubs and conservation districts, and the water utilities that particularly in Fairfield County just see so much water going into the ground, I think that could be a very good effort that would really save water, that would raise consciousness, and we could do it in all parts of the state. But it would require specific focus on what you can do in Connecticut with Connecticut plants, our very own rocks. And so I wanted to say, I think there's a door sort of half open at this time for that kind of initiative.
Great. Good to hear.
Margaret, I would add, you could probably couple this with the pollinator movement.
Yep.
We've got a couple of pollinator gardens around our land, and we've actually heard some interest from other towns in doing the same thing in cooperation with us. So that may be.
Yep. We're doing it up here, too. I'm waiting for the butterflies.
Let me just chime in. One is like it's the water conservation piece, it's the pollinator piece, and the sustainable landscaping also is about water quality in terms of pesticide use and fertilizer and whatever. So that whole movement is really important. And there is potential, if we had the right information developed, to go out and do and get funding to do the workshops, to do the education, either through the Long Island Sound dollars and or with USDA. So I don't know, I guess one of the questions is, have you worked with USDA? They're doing a lot of work on pollinators and, you know, obviously soil health in yards and the whole idea of the native plantings. Have you worked with them at all?
Well, we haven't worked directly with USDA. We've done our presentations we've done a big study on landscape transformation, and we did a presentation to USDA on that. But we are not really tied into the pollinator movement, but we're tied into soil health, because that's part of a watershed-based approach to landscaping. So we've been basically working with those folks there. And I'd be happy to send out the materials that we already have on this topic. But I think to address the comment I think that Margaret made, we need to make it very specific to Connecticut and make sure that, you know, it's not perceived that we're just taking stuff that we have done elsewhere and then just band-aiding it in place. It's not the case. We would want to make sure it's a very Connecticut-specific, Connecticut-driven program.
Yeah, so we do have a USDA office right in Connecticut with a soil scientist and agronomist and whatever. So I think it would be a great partnership to
great.
In terms of you know, working with them, and the reason that it being is they also have dollars to fund the implementation.
Yeah, they do. They get money in the farm bill. And Cooperative Extension in the past has always been a good partner too on a lot of these efforts. So we'd look to see what Cooperative Extension might be able to participate in doing.
I would like to jump in here because we have 2 minutes left. In terms of your fourth question here, how shall we structure stakeholder input into the process? I think as a quick answer for the short term, what we should plan to do is have the advisory group stay in close communication with you and with the implementation group. And because our advisory group has a wider representation of stakeholders than other groups that are involved in this process, I think that would be a starting place. And
okay.
If you're working on a particular section and there's a place that's appropriate for fairly short-term turnaround input, that we would look to the advisory group to do that. Obviously, at least at the end of this process, there will be a public comment period, but that can go on for months. And I think to facilitate your movement on this, you would want a forum where there could be more immediate feedback if it were appropriate. So I would suggest that we do that. And as we move through this, we can adjust that plan as may be needed.
Okay. Thank you. And I just have the last slide up, which has my email address. And please feel free to email me. I love everybody's input on this process. I want to make sure, again, that we have everybody involved.
Thank you. And Marianne, thank you. Your enthusiasm is contagious, and I really like the fact to bring my old friend, Dr. Beecher, involved in this process.
She'll be good on this topic, especially on the COVID issues and the financial losses. She'll be helpful on that, too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so this now is officially the end of the implementation work group, and we're in the middle of the advisory group, and so I will pitch it over to you, Alicia and Josh.
Can't hear you.
Alicia, are you there?
You're muted.
I was on mute, sorry. do we feel like we want to take a 5-minute break before delving into the advisory group, or do we want to start right in?
On the schedule, it was actually another 15-minute break.
Okay.
I think maybe a 5-minute break would be good. So I'm sure most people that are going to join are already on.
I just want to point out, this is Dave Retta. I'll probably be signing off. Thank you, everyone, for participating. And John Hudak, it doesn't look like you did trim your beard. You threatened to.
That's great.
Take care, everyone.
All right. Well, we'll take a quick 5-minute break. I'm going to pause the recording. And I will see you all back here at, well, let's call it 2:10, just to make it an even number.
Okay.
Hey, Lisa, it's Tom Tyler. I just want to let you know I have another meeting at 2:30, so I'll be signing off just a few minutes before then.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
The recording.
Do we have everybody back? And Karen is here.
Yeah, she just said she was here.
Okay.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Karen. And who is 4961? They wish to remain anonymous. It's 2:10, so let's go ahead and call this meeting to order. Thank you to everybody who joined us for the Marianne Dickinson presentation. We had this planned for this meeting anyway, and we're glad that she was able to join us, considering the changes that have happened since we talked about doing this. Let's start with, we're calling the meeting to order. Let's start with the approval of the February 18th, 2020 minutes. Did everybody have a chance to take a look at them? And does anyone have any comments, changes, corrections? Give everybody just a minute or two more to get off mute, if anybody had any. All right. Can I get a motion to approve the February 18th minutes?
Karen, so move.
Karen made the motion. Can I get a second?
John, second.
Who said that?
John.
Let Sean take it if he wants.
Okay, we'll let Sean. Sean Hayes seconded the motion of the minutes. And all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Are there any abstentions? If you abstain, please say your name.
Tom Tower abstained. I wasn't at the meeting on the 8th, on February 8th.
Great. Thanks, Tom.
Fred Klein also abstaining.
Okay. So we have Fred and Tom. Anyone else? All right. So we have approved the meeting, the minutes of the February 18th meeting. I think we could do a quick implementation work group update. I think a lot of us were on that call, though, so I'm not sure. Was everyone on the call for the implementation work group?
I was not.
Okay. All right.
I was not.
I was not.
Okay. All right. So
I can do it very briefly.
Only for Marianne.
We had a meeting this morning this noon time. And in terms of the topical subgroups, the big news was, as you probably remember, the private well group was pulling together a white paper to justify the development of a database for the well completion reports that have to date been done in paper. And it turns out that the Department of Consumer Protection has already developed that database with the information from the well completion reports. And the small group that was from DPH, DEEP, and our well group had an opportunity to look at that. There are a couple of questions that they want to follow up on, but in general, they have already done what was proposed. So the white paper really has lost its raison d'etre, if you will. But it's very exciting news. Not only have they developed this database, but they will be willing to maintain it into the future. So that was very encouraging to hear. The drought group expects that they'll need a couple of more meetings to get through their analysis of what's been done by the interagency drought work group during the 2016-17 drought.
And so they expect that they maybe need 3 more months to do that, and then maybe an additional 3 months to pull together their thoughts and write up a report. So they have not met since early March, but are planning to do so remotely in the future. Lastly, we had to update our membership because half the group was on 1-year terms. The people whose term actually has expired as of this month, most of all, were willing to continue. We still have a vacancy of Brian Hurlbut, and though it was mentioned that we could, representing out-of-stream interests, and though it was mentioned that we would probably have very little trouble getting another water industry person in that category, Dave Radka is an existing person, that people felt quite strongly that we should try and get a representative from agriculture. As you know, even from this group, that's been very difficult. But Jack Batosky was on the call and said he would reach out to Brian Hurlbut and see if we couldn't get some recommendations that way. So that's where we left the discussion of the membership. That's it.
Okay.
Thank you, Virginia. Any questions for Virginia?
Virginia, the database, does it have coordinates or is it?
Yes, it has lat long. I think he said to 5 digits, maybe it was 7 digits. I don't recall exactly what he said, but it is now going to be requiring the lat long in the well from the well drillers. I should have said that this is a database for upcoming information. They do not at the moment have a plan in place for getting the old information into that. A couple of suggestions came up. Lori Matthew mentioned that DPH has some people who have some students who are looking for internships for the summer. Traditionally, that involves a lot of field work, which is not possible, obviously, at this point. And so that is a possible task that the interns might do. Also, Brenda Watson mentioned that sometimes people doing GIS have to do a certain number of hours to maintain their certification. So that was another path that would be following, in addition to continuing to work with Gary Robbins at UConn, seeing if some of his students might be available. The GIS stuff, Brenda said, people have done free of charge in the past, so that's definitely an option, and she was going to get me contact information to follow up on that.
Thanks. Okay, any other questions or comments? Alicia?
I think after I called the meeting to order, I don't think that we acknowledged a quorum, but do you want to just verify now that we called the meeting to order that we do have a quorum?
I'm showing 17 members present out of 20, so that's pretty good.
Killed it.
All right. Are there any other water planning or state water plan matters that we're missing? Okay, let's move on to old business. Is there a water utility coordinating committee update?
I think most of the water, the WOOCs have put off their meetings until after this virus is. I know the Eastern WOOC canceled their last meeting and have not rescheduled it at this point. Is there an update from any of the other WOOCs?
This is Dan. That's consistent with the Western WOOC.
Okay.
Is there... we had a website progress update with the implementation work group. Can we just go over that again one more time for the people who are not on the implementation work group?
Sure, I can do that. I spoke with Eric Lindquist late last week and asked him about it. He has a beta version of the website, which he gave me access to. It looks very good. He has been trying to work on it from home. but because he has to remotely log into the computer at OPM, and other people are doing the same thing, he said it's been a very tedious and frustrating exercise because the system keeps dropping him. And so he's going to continue working on that, but it's, as I said, it looks like it was in pretty good shape. If there's anything that you're involved with that would be information or anything that you would want to see on that site, do send it to him because he's populating. There's one of the links, which is to various documents where he has the agendas and the minutes from both the implementation work group and the advisory group are, he's posting there. So if there's anything that you think should be part of that, send it directly to Eric and he can add it to the website.
Okay. Some of you may have noticed that we took off the nominating committee finally. We do have a full slate, which is the first time in a while. So that's good news. Thanks for the nominating committee for filling that last position. Alicia, you want to move on to work groups?
Sure. Does the Watershed Lands Group have anything, any updates since the last meeting?
Yeah, just a quick update. First of all, I want to say that I think Josh and John are looking quite good with their beards here. They're growing out and they look quite distinguished. And also on the nominating committee, the thanks to the last member, the thanks go to Dan Lawrence again. So he did a great job. Anyway, Watershed Lands Group, at our last meeting, we talked about two issues. The first one being the siting of green energy projects on a water company land. And the outcome at the last meeting was that Alicia and Josh were going to contact DPH to try to set up a meeting so we could discuss further whether it should be just green energy projects or any major project that would have a significant effect on water and land, and whether in addition to it should be not just water company land, but all drinking water watershed land. As a kind of a final item, we would like to discuss with DPH the transparency issue in their permitting process. So those, we're on kind of on hold and waiting for this meeting with DPH. And I think, to be honest, it's a very difficult time to set up a meeting, but that's where we are on the siting of green energy projects. The other issue that we discussed at the last meeting is the conveyance by the legislature in special session last summer of 48 acres of land, aquifer protection land in Cheshire. And with that topic, we have two issues that primarily Margaret has been following up on. One is the issue itself, actually the specifics on this parcel of land in Cheshire. And Margaret, bless you. Please chime in at any time.
Okay.
She has contacted DAS, a couple individuals, the staffers there, and just as of today found out that DAS is not we thought there would be there was a properties management committee that had to actually approve what the legislature had voted on to convey. And now we're finding that it is really a DOT issue.
I'll jump in here.
Go ahead.
We did know it's DOT land and that's where we started, and they preferred not to discuss it and started sending us along. And we had someone who gave us some very good names, the last of which were at DAS, who said, no, you have to speak. I think it's Amy at DOT, which is where I started. So so we've made quite a few calls and we've come in a circle, but I'm ever hopeful. What should we do next? We have a couple of ideas.
Well, we have a couple. The one idea is to just go directly to the legislative leadership and to see what information we can find out on that. This is, once again, with the legislature not being in session, it's not that we can go up and stand by somebody's door and hound them until we get some information. But It has been frustrating, and like I said, to give Margaret a lot of credit for starting out at DOT, going to DOS, now realizing she was supposed to go, we have to go back to DOT, and thinking maybe we should just look at the legislative leadership. think about that when I talk about the second issue that we were looking at under the conveyance of land, and that is trying to review the request questionnaire that legislators must fill out in order to request the conveyance. Once again, Margaret had been very good at trying to get a meeting with the GAE chair or with the staff involved. And what's coming up is we really do need to talk to the GAE chair or the staffers. We have never actually gotten a copy of a blank questionnaire. We do have questions that are on it that we could forward if you would like. We could forward to the members of the advisory group. We had hoped to, and Margaret and I also have some comments of our own, some questions we would like to add or changes we would like to recommend. But we really had wanted to talk to the staffers to find before we went back to the advisory group to see what they would suggest. And so we've kind of hit a not a dead end, but like I said, with the legislature not being in session and not going to meet possibly until special session this summer, it has been difficult to get information. And once again, I'll turn it over. Margaret, did you have anything else you wanted to add on that?
I would just say, I think at this point, since we have the questions that exist and we have the questions that you and I thought should be added, we might as well get, and certainly there's some very knowledgeable members of the advisory group, some of the questions they would like to see. And when we do catch up with someone from the legislature, we'll have a complete, you know, a complete thing to show them. These are the questions we feel ought to be asked. Is this a problem? So it'd be great if the members of the advisory group could help with these questions. What do they think legislators should know before they convey land away?
And will you share the ones you already have put together?
We have a list of the questions that are on the current form that legislators have to fill out. And we have a list that Karen and I thought would be good questions to add to the form. And since we weren't able, particularly Mae Flexer, who I've worked with and I sort of counted on, she evaporated. So we'll go back. But I think at this point, I don't know if Karen agrees, we might as well get all the advisory group questions or comments. And then when we go to the when we do pin down a legislator in a mask, we can say these are the questions that the group feels would be helpful to have on a form, on a conveyance form.
Yeah. Alicia and Josh, I believe we sent them around to you and to Bruce prior to the last meeting that we ended up having to cancel because of the concerns regarding the spread of the COVID virus. But we can send them around again. And if Bruce, if you could send them, we'll send them to all of you. And if you could send them out to everyone asking for your comments, then we can try to compile them. And when we do finally either get to meet with a member of the GAA or a committee or a staffer, will have your input along with ours, and we can hopefully have a very good discussion on how to move forward.
That would be great, and then I could have some of our attorneys look at it and see how it lines up with existing statutes when it comes to the sale of property.
Good.
That would be great. Thank you.
Hey, Virginia, this is Dave Kuzminski. How you doing? Hey, I know we were looking for going back just a little bit for a non-consumptive party to participate possibly on a party. And I brought it up a couple of meetings ago. We had our Economic Development Commission coordinator in town here, Mary Dickinson, who also sits on the Middletown Board of the Middlesex Chamber of Commerce, but she's been instrumental in we may be able to kill two birds with one stone, but she's developed a farm advisory group for the Middlesex Chamber, and she's very integrated. I've just emailed her. She's going to try to call in and so forth, but her name is Mary Dickinson, and that may be a solution to kind of kill two birds with one stone on the non-consumptive use.
Okay, thank you for that.
Virginia, this is Karen, and if I may add, there's also other farmland groups. There was one where Terry Jones used to be the president of, I think it's the Farmland Trust. very active and very involved. But there are a couple other, you know, regional farm or statewide farmland organizations that you might want to look at also.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so as Karen and Margaret, does that complete your?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it does.
Okay, just checking. The Conservation Pricing and Rate Recovery Analysis Work Group. So after the last meeting in February, after speaking with Mary Ann Dickinson and at Virginia's suggestion, it seemed like really the best way to move forward on this was to wait until Mary Ann had done her workshop before the Conservation Pricing and Rate Recovery Analysis Work Group would convene. So that way we can build off of her work and carry forth on some work that perhaps she had not planned on doing convening our stakeholder group to get that done. So that's on hold right now, along with pretty much many other things. So there really isn't anything to report there, except that, you know, we're waiting to see how things are going to move forth with the work that Mary Ann is doing. So that's all I have on that. Are there any questions, comments?
Sure. Alicia, I just got a text from Mary Ann Dickinson. She's on by phone,
okay.
So Mary Ann, if you're there, if you want to jump in.
Mary, not Mary Ann, right?
I'm sorry.
Our names are
Mary Ann Dickinson was on the call earlier, so I'm sorry, Mary. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Yep. I'm here.
Sure. And again, the group we're looking in, and maybe you can kind of premise that, either Margaret or Virginia, on non-consumptive contributors and so forth to the advisory group.
Dave, I'm a little bit confused because in the implementation work group, we were looking for a consumptive representative.
I'm sorry.
You're talking about, or are you talking about somebody for this advisory?
No. I'm sorry. The consumptive group, sure.
And that was for part of the implementation work group. I don't believe we're looking for anybody for this group, the advisory group. Is that correct, Alicia?
No, we're not. All of our slots are filled.
Our slate is full.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I thought we were looking for, you know, somebody, because Mary is also basically involved quite heavily in the Middlesex Chamber. She's on the board over there. I know we're looking for input from those folks and so forth. So I think Mary would be an awesome, bridge to connection.
Okay, Mary, if you could put your contact information into the chat, I'll follow up with you at a later date.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. So I just wanted to touch on the agency operations during the COVID-19 restrictions. You know, things obviously have to continue moving forward, even though things may be moving a little bit slower. But I know DEP is working to find a way to process applications that have a public hearing component to them. And I'm sure DPH is doing the best they can to get their regular work done. I don't think we have anyone from DPH left on this call, do we? I think Lori Matthew jumped off. Jack, how are things moving forward in the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority?
They're actually, can you hear me?
Yep.
They're moving pretty smoothly. I mean, I had a public hearing this morning via Zoom, and it went well. It's pretty much business as usual. We had a joint proceeding with public health. So, you know, we lost a few weeks, but for the most part, you know, applications are coming in and we're setting up hearings and doing, you know, obviously we're not going out sometimes requires a public hearing. For example, if there's a land sale or something like that, but we're doing things via Zoom, so the public can weigh in on Zoom. So,
okay.
So it's been going pretty well. I think that, believe it or not, and our consumer call, you know, we have a fully staffed consumer unit, that those calls seem to be down, believe it or not, because we do have a moratorium on any kind of utility shutoffs. And as a matter of fact, you should know that on the date of our next, what would have been our next Water Planning Council meeting on May 5th, it's postponed to May 12th because we're going to have two webinars on the 5th with public and private companies about how they're handling, we call it our pandemic docket, how they're handling their customers and people that might be having challenges paying their bills and what the companies are doing to work with those people that have some economic challenges. So I invite all of you to go on our website and join that if you wish.
Great. Does anybody else have any more comments, questions, concerns about how the agencies will be moving forward on water-related issues going forward? I don't know if I can answer any of the questions, but I'm sure somebody on the call can.
This is Iris. I just have a general question based on what John Hudak shared earlier about the dire state of the water companies. Are we doing anything at a state level to secure funds for the water companies? That's one part of it. And on the other hand, I understand that there are going to be no shutoffs for people who can't pay their bills. I don't know if that's 100% correct, and I don't know the extent of this issue with people can't pay their bills. So, but shouldn't this come to the front of our group? You know, this we're now in emergency mode. Is there anything that the group could do, or any requests from the group?
Well, that was actually the next item on the agenda during the updates for the stakeholder group.
In front of me.
What's that?
Okay.
Yeah, that was definitely something we wanted to bring up.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that nobody else has any questions about specifically DPH, DEP, or how PURA is moving forward on items. All right, well, let's dig in. I put 7B on the agenda because I know there are a lot of challenges right now, very specific to COVID-19 for the water utilities. You know, there are certainly some challenges in all of our stakeholder groups. And I just wanted to see if what opportunities there are for us to work together on some of these issues. What we heard from John Hudak today was fairly alarming. I was already aware of the issue with the wastewater, on the wastewater side, of getting the word out to keep people from flushing things other than toilet paper, which is a very boring but important thing when, you know, our wastewater utilities are trying very hard to keep up with their operations at this time, and everything is getting gummed up with paper towels and what are flushable wipes. And I think a lot of us are aware of it. I know a lot of the groups on this call are already sharing a lot of that information, but, you know, John had brought up, you know, what they're facing, and is there anything that can be done? I know there's a movement at the federal level to move forward on some funding through the Clean Water Fund and some funding to allow the utilities to have some revenue from make up for some of the revenue losses at this point. And does anybody have any updates on where that stands? Is there anything we can do as a group to help that along? And I'll stop talking now and let somebody chime in. But I'd really like to find a way for all of us to work together to get through this. So,
You know, Lisa, it's a good question, and I'm not sure the last, and of course they're voting, I believe, today for, on another package in D.C. It seems like everything under the sun was included in that terms of eligibility, but I'm not sure, or maybe John or something, I'm not sure water utilities were. It seems like everybody else was. But I also know, I'm sure that the water companies were eligible for some of the loans that the companies took advantage of. So I'm not sure if any, nobody has notified us of that. So
I don't know either. I could check with Larry or something, you know, see what's going on there. We're actually having a town hall meeting with employees later today. So
right. But I do know we have weekly calls with Lori Matthew in Public Health, which, and we have a lot of people on those calls. And a few weeks ago, John, I think regional water's consumption, I want to say, was down about 18-20%. It was down a lot.
I don't know if it's that high, but it's probably pushing 10 anyway.
10%. I thought they said it was high.
Yeah, and we've also delayed, we had planned a rate case for this summer. We're going to delay that by a year, which really means we won't have our full capital program kind of up and running as much as you can predict it anyway, probably till 2022.
But then, Alicia, there's other companies like I know Torrington, I know Connect Water are still doing, and I believe Aquarian, they're still doing infrastructure replacement right now, so. They're still doing capital projects.
Are some utilities more challenged than others because they are primarily urban utilities, whereas the utilities that serve mostly residential customers may actually be seeing an increase in revenue because we're all home? Is this an across the board issue for all the utilities is what I'm asking.
Alicia, this is Betsy Guerra from CWWA.
Hi, Betsy. Thank you.
We are actually discussing this on Friday at our virtual board of directors meeting, so I should have more information at that point. But I know nationally the American Water Works Association is projecting drops in revenues of up to 30% for some utilities. And I think, you know, there may be some validity to urban areas that are served in urban communities because they do have more building closures and manufacturing and whatnot. But we're hearing from everyone that it's a big concern. And again, we'll be discussing it more on Friday. And if we have any follow-up or any way that this group could be of assistance, I can let you know after the meeting.
You know, Betsy, it's Jack. I'd really be interested in feedback from that meeting. Alicia, there's less people have asked me the question, oh, what's going on with the energy? Well, we have less energy consumption going on right now because think of all the office buildings and factories that have cut back and schools aren't open, and that's a lot of power that's not being utilized right now. So we have plenty of energy going through the grid, that's for sure. So
it's not just less usage, but we are expecting reduced collections from the usage we are billing. People just can't pay their bills if they're not working.
Right.
And then the executive order is also directed the municipal utilities, the special taxing districts, et cetera, to actually join their towns in terms of whether they're going to either defer collection of property taxes and utility bills or subject delinquent bills to a lower interest rate. And so they've deadlined for providing information to OPM on which program the towns and the utilities are selecting is April 25th. So we should have a good handle on which towns are expected to see a big drop in revenues as a result of that as well.
Right.
And Betsy, do you have any update on the federal package, whether they were able to specifically put money in for increasing the Clean Water Fund money to help utilities through this?
I don't have that information at this point, no.
Okay.
I could check. I'll check. That, so. Yeah, and I'll check with our national or national association commissioners too, and see if there's that. We get regular updates, and I don't recall, but I'll check and I'll let you know.
Okay,
that'd be great.
So is there anything else on this topic?
Betsy, yeah. Betsy's tight, and maybe she can tell us when we're going to open up. Betsy, when we're going to open the state up?
I wish I knew, because we have our fall conference scheduled for October 20th, and I don't know if that's going to – I'm hoping by then, but who knows?
Who knows?
They did close the legislature at this point. They're not going back in, so
– So I have a question. This is Margaret. Great to help the water companies. I'm assuming that capital projects are really helpful now because people are employs people. Are we working toward expressions of support that would come from the Water Planning Council as well as in different ways from the advisory group? Will we be able to get that together? Maybe this is for Jack.
But when you say support in terms of additional funding for the companies?
Well, I'm thinking of federal funds, probably of a couple of different types, and whatever else is available. Just I think the Water Planning Council is obviously a leader, and if we could get our suggestions together in the different programs, because I'm certainly confused as to who gets what, but maybe you and Betsy and Alicia can at all, John can figure it out.
Well, what we'll do is before our next Water Planning Council meeting on the 12th, I'll make sure I get information to Water Planning Council Advisory Group in terms of what I find out, and Betsy can do the same, and then we can talk about it that day in terms of what we want to do.
Great.
Right. And this is Betsy again. There is an effort by the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations that Martin Hecht has been very active on, and they are identifying ways to position the state and local communities for economic recovery. And one of the things that they mentioned is exactly what you said, Margaret, is that if we can get money into these capital projects and get people, not just for water, but a whole host mm-hmm. of infrastructure projects, it would be great to get people back to work and make sure that we're setting the stage for long-term economic recovery. So I can make sure that effort, that you're tied into that effort as well.
Good, thanks.
Anybody have anything else to share before I move to public comment?
I have a public comment.
I was just saying, happy Earth Day, Dave, in advance.
Oh, happy birthday. So here's my request. Before these meetings, could we have a little prep session on lighting and makeup and background and how to place the camera? Because I'm struggling with this. Alicia, you look very good there.
Alicia looks great.
I know.
What's that, Matt? Is that your office?
It's my temporary office in my house. It's a Connecticut watershed map.
Very nice.
Wow.
Yeah. it's a great breath background.
So Alicia, I just want to clarify my comment from that I just said a few minutes ago about the pricing and rate analysis. I just wanted to see if there's anything creative we could do before going through the workshop and legislation, anything on maybe a voluntary basis, or we cannot, or our hands are tied regarding, because theoretically we talked in the past that on one hand, people don't want to see their water rates go up, period. On the other hand, we had a conversation and many people would be happy to pay a little bit more for their water usage, but then we have to be considerate to people who don't have the means to pay them. Is there anything creative that the committee could suggest or do that is not not tied to legislation that won't happen before next?
Well, it's not the legislation we're waiting on. It's not the legislation we're waiting on. We agree that it would be best for Marianne Dickinson to have her workshops before we do our work.
Okay.
Makes sense. Yeah. So it has it doesn't have anything to do with legislation.
Okay.
So did anyone have anything else on any other updates from the stakeholder groups on COVID-19 issues? Anything we should all be aware of since we're all together once a month the first time?
Yeah, I have a comment. Yale has it was a weekly update on COVID, and one of the researches that are being done now, they're looking into the sewer. I think they're looking at the east, the local sewer plant in New Haven, and different spots around the hospital and Metro North at the Union State Station. They're looking at sewage to see if they could find coronavirus in the sewage, and that's one way of tracing the virus and that it. Seeing that it where it exists, so I thought that's interesting.
Okay, this
group from a medical group and School of Public Health is looking into that. I thought that could be interesting, maybe.
Very.
That is interesting.
This is
all
Judy
right.
Allen.
Oh, hi, Judy. How are you?
Hi. I have a public comment.
Oh, I was just about to say, do we have any public comment? So go, Judy.
I wanted to comment about something that Lori Matthews said during the presentation by Marianne Dickinson in terms of the COVID-19. I think we want to make sure that what we're asking her to do really is going to address some of the special challenges, and we don't know what those challenges are. I would hate us to get something that applies to the past that may not apply to the future. That's my comment.
A good comment.
Thank you, Judy. Is there anyone else?
Hi, everyone. This is Len DeYoung. I'm going to jump in here only because for those of you who are on video, I actually combed my hair and put a new shirt on today. So I just wanted to jump in and say that I've been listening in since noon, and I wanted to compliment all of you for the outstanding work that you're doing implementation work group wise, Marianne's presentation, as well as the advisory group, particularly during these very difficult times. I, too, wanted to wish you a happy Earth Day. It'll be a different one, but even more important for us to get outside and enjoy it. And most importantly, I wanted to wish you and your families good health and safety. Thanks.
Thank you, Len.
Good to see your face, Len.
Great. Thank you.
We missed you.
We're glad you had your tech support there so we can see your face.
I've already thanked her, and I'll have to thank her again.
All right, is there anything else for the good of the order?
Good meeting, Alicia. You run a good meeting.
Yeah, well, I'm becoming an expert Zoomer now.
By the way, everybody remember Gail Lucina's mom in your prayers, because I got a text. We've been on for since noon, so I got a text to her from her between, and looks very much like her mother. Mother does have the COVID virus, so remember her in your prayers, please.
Sure. We'll send good thoughts her way. We will, I know it says May 19th location to be determined, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be right back here on May 19th on a Zoom call. It will be our regular time, so keep a lookout for that, and unless something else happens and this virus miraculously goes away, We'll be seeing each other's faces on our computer screens, so, and hearing each other's voices. So everybody stay safe and healthy. And Josh, is there anything I was forgetting?
No, I think we covered it all there. Good job.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank all right. You. Thanks, everybody.
Thank
good
you.
To see you.
Right,
oh, that meeting good adjourned.
Adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
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 So long, everyone.